Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Very excited to be here with you this Wednesday morning, October 30th. It is Halloween Eve, and you can feel the chill in the air as winter has finally descended upon us here in the Old Pueblo. What also descended upon us this weekend was Parents Weekend at the University of Arizona. If you did not have the opportunity to check out some local restaurant establishments, they were jamming. We were absolutely packed this weekend, and probably the busiest weekend we've had since that first week of May, where you get the U of A's graduation and Mother's Day all piling in right around the same time. Looking at the sales numbers and comparing it to the same day last year that wasn't Parents Weekend, we were up 40% in our restaurants alone. And if you look at the foodies pages on Tucson, there are restaurateurs and restaurant employees just talking about how they got their butts kicked all weekend long. It's a big numbers game out there in the restaurant business. And as I was going through our sales report over the course of the weekend, we did 19,379 orders, right? At Union, Reforma, Proof, and the Maverick over those 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 19,000 orders. Now, that's not necessarily 19,000 tables. There might have been, a single beer ordered in our point of sale system that counts as a table. But likewise, that could have been a 20 top altogether as well. 19,379 transactions. And we go out there every week in the restaurant business and try to do it right. I'm out there trying about 1,000 and make absolutely everybody happy. But gosh, is that a tall task when you got 19,000 people out there. It just doesn't always go as smooth as you like. To give you an example, we had 3 one-star Yelps at the end of the weekend when I got to review, one of which left by a Monique was very, very upset because their small children, while they were dining for brunch, were crawling all over the other restaurant's tables, stripping off the silverware and the salt and pepper shakers. And we kind of turned our eye to that one for a little while. And then they started crawling in and out of the fire pit areas. And these fire pits have like this fire pit glass in them, right? That's designed to take high heat, but also has some sharp edges. And then finally, this group of small children makes their way behind the outside bar, right, in St. Philip's Plaza. Now, behind that bar, we've got sharp metal edges. We've got trash cans. We've got soda guns. And we have liquor. You know, like there's kind of a liability here at some point. And of course, when we go to approach this table, you know, we're greeted with anger and vitriol because there's absolutely no nice way to tell people to control their kids, right? It's just like if you told somebody about their pet that it can't be sitting on the chair with them, or this purse dog is somehow a violation of Pima County health rules. When you tell somebody that their child is misbehaving in some capacity, look out, there is a one-star Yelp waiting for you. Now, why I bring this up is because in life, in the rest of our world, with everything we have going on right now, it's a huge numbers game. We're sitting 6 days away from one of the more important elections that we've probably ever had in our lifetime, and probably one of the more contentious elections I've ever seen in my short little life over here. There are 13 ballot initiatives, dozens of rogue candidates, a four-page monster ballot to go through. And as I look at how and where and what people choose for those particular initiatives, I've gotten a lot of calls and emails and texts from listeners and friends that say, Grant, you're a political pundit. How should I vote on this or that, or where should I go? And I look at those things and I think to myself, there's almost no way that even some of my friends or colleagues that might even be on the same team as me politically are all going to line up the exact same way. This is a numbers game as well, too. If we just looked at the 13 ballot initiatives and you took each one at a 50-50 shot, I recognize that we're taking a bit of a leap of faith here with that. There is a 1 in 8,192 chance that somebody else's would look exactly like mine in this coin flip of 50-50 13 times in a row. Add in just a couple more positions. Think, oh, the contemptuous presidential race we have. Let's throw in our congressional race between Juan Ciscomani and Kristen Engel, and maybe like say Senate, and take 16 votes. And at a 50-50 shot, you're looking at 1 in 65,536. You, my listener out there, are truly a snowflake because your vote, the way your ballot is filled out, is probably going to be unique and not the same as everybody else's. When I look at other numbers, I got a message this week that said, I made a mistake last week, right? And as somebody that has a fair bit of journalistic integrity, in spite of our show, of course, being entertainment and in the entertainment business, I certainly wanted to know how I could have made a mistake numbers-wise. And a listener reached out to me and told me that I made a mistake in my interview with Supervisor Steve Christie last week when I said he was the highest-rated candidate by the Metro Chamber for Pima County Supervisor. Upon reviewing that information, that listener was correct. While Steve Christie was rated a 7.7, which was higher than his competitor Vanessa Bechtel at a 6.6, Rex Scott was actually the highest rated Pima County Supervisor by the Metro Chamber at a 7.8, which is 1/10 of a point higher than 7.7, and certainly substantially higher than the 6.0 that his competitor Steve Spain was ranked by this particular group. So I wanted to own that mistake, bring it to my listeners over here, and let you know that I'm truly trying to give you the absolute best and most honest numbers out there. I'm never going to tell you exactly where to vote, but I do want to give you the information so that you can make an informed decision on yourself. Not shockingly, the other numbers on these very important Pima County Supervisors races also aren't all that particularly close. Janet Wittenbraker got a 6.5, which is substantially higher than Jennifer Allen's 5.0. John Backer, who's been on this show before, got a 7.3 by the Metro Chamber. And, of course, Supervisor Matt Hines and Adelitra Gahalva chose not to attend these events. John has been pretty critical of Matt Hines' attendance record, not just at the supervisor meetings, but also for forums like this. And this information happens to still be on the Metro Chamber's website. If you go to TucsonChamber.org, you can take a peek at those interviews. It's a really great format to get a 20-minute interview with what are really, really important races. Like, these are honestly going to affect your lives substantially more than what is coming up on the federal elections, the things that we all get excited about. Pima County supervisors truly are going to make a humongous difference in your lives. Speaking of chambers, when we come back after the break, I'm going to bring in Rob Elias, who's the president and CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, a chamber that's had a long history of producing political leaders such as Juan Ciscomani and Leah Marquez Peterson, maybe even a bit of the minor leagues in the political system in Southern Arizona. Rob Elias from the Tucson Hispanic Chamber coming up next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on Jump In Tucson, 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson with your host, Grant Krueger. We are joined live in the KVOI studios by both a friend and colleague of mine in business over here. This is Mr. Rob Elias, who's the president and CEO of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Grant. How are you, sir?
I'm well. Thanks for joining us today on Jump In Tucson.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, I was saying before that the Hispanic Chamber has a really outsized influence on Tucson politics over here, right? Joining myself in 2011, the first year that we opened up Union Hospitality Group, right, having come from Mexico and having a restaurant down there the previous decade, I recognize how important, you know, both the Hispanic community and business owners are to Southern Arizona, right? You see the malls that were lined with Sonoran plates every single weekend. And it's often a group that's marginalized or not thought about as highly or as respected as they should be. And so it's a real pleasure to have you on today as the president and CEO of the Hispanic Chamber.
Well, man, this is a great conversation. I love having talks like this, so I appreciate the platform.
So give us our listeners a little breakdown about yourself. You're a University of Arizona graduate like myself.
Bear down.
Tough weekend for the Cats.
Oh, man. The past few weekends have been tough.
So tell our listeners about your path, about how you became president of the Hispanic Chamber. A little background here.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do so. You know, I've served in a multitude of capacities over the year. Over the past 25 years, I've been in leadership here in Tucson. I'm a native Tucsonan, so this is home, and it will always be home. I've been fortunate enough to be placed in situations that have put cool tools in my tool belt that have made me, I think, effective at my job, and I hope you feel as a fan of the work that we do, feel that we are effective in what we do. But I've served mainly in nonprofits and financial sector in my career with credit unions, but I've been a community builder and a community organizer for years.
No, that's awesome. And so how long have you been president now of the Hispanic Chamber?
A little over 3.5 years now.
Right. Basically, during all of COVID. So perfect timing, right, to pick up a business advocacy group over there.
No kidding. Yeah, it was tough. But yeah, I credit my predecessor, Isabel Georgellis, who was the interim CEO for about 15 months. And she really did an amazing job through a very difficult time.
So the Hispanic Chamber has been around, to my understanding, since 1989, correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And there's been some amazing leadership through there. When I first started on that chamber as just a member, of course, Leah Marquez Peterson was at the helm. Juan Siscomani was right there behind her as well, too. These are some pretty big names in Southern Arizona politics.
Yeah. I mean, we've had some incredible influential people that have worked at our organization. Certainly, Congressman Siscomani is at the top of that list. Leah Marquez Peterson has been on the Corporation Commission for a number of years and doing a really, really good job there. And so the chamber is a very political entity. I realized how political it was until after I got highly involved. But it's a job that I absolutely love. I love talking about politics with people. I love learning from different perspectives, especially from people that we fundamentally disagree with.
Well, one of the things that I've always appreciated about the Hispanic Chamber is that they've been less afraid to actually take positions than, say, the Tucson Metro Chamber, even SALC. And I'm not knocking those organizations. I'm part of them. I try to participate with them as well, too. But sometimes I fear that our chambers trade access to our politicians for wishy-washiness and not taking a stance on things that are important in the business community.
Yeah, it's a difficult balance that we have to maintain sometimes, especially as an organization like ours. We are a nonpartisan organization, so we will never endorse candidates or anything like that. But what we do speak out on, and sometimes very aggressively, either in support or in opposition of, is the policies that help shape the future of the region. And that could be anything ranging from healthcare to education to immigration status to even rates for utilities. I mean, things like that play a huge part in our local economy, and I don't think enough people realize that.
No, without a doubt. And if we're not willing to stand up and take positions sometimes, right, when you try to be everything to everybody, you just can't get it done, right? As I was saying in the last segment, it's truly a numbers game out there. There is a 0% chance that any position you take, the chamber takes, I take, is going to make 100% of the people happy.
That's right.
It's just not possible up front. And sometimes we need to stick up for things that are right for business, that are right for our society, for our community. I applaud the chamber, particularly in 2016, when they took a strong position against the Proposition 206, that was Arizona's rising minimum wage. They left out a tremendous clause in there about that server tip wage that now is hopefully going to be corrected on our ballot in six contemptuous days from now. But they were one of the few chambers to actually stick up for that. And they took a lot of arrows for it. I know as somebody that stuck up for that myself, I took a lot of arrows for it, right? The media said, you were saying that you don't want the fight for 15. It's wrong. And I remember saying that that's going to create a $15 hamburger on every restaurant menu in the state of Arizona. And just a few years later, you look at it, and what's a hamburger cost these days?
Right. And that's the difficult thing with any of these pieces of proposed legislation is that there are unintended consequences with so many of them, and they all have catchy slogans that sound really great, and you have to look beyond the obvious on a lot of them because there's so much stuff in there, and you just have to be careful with what you're voting for and know what you're voting for.
No, and ballot initiatives can be incredibly complex with basically a four-pager, two pages, full on each side over here with 13 ballot initiatives. That's a lot of verbiage, and some of it's been crafted by lawyers, for lawyers. You're talking about constitutional amendments that by their nature don't have simplistic language in them because it's an actual change to the state constitution. So this is pretty serious stuff.
Absolutely. And so we've always been, kind of screaming from our mountaintop for people to vote. I wrote an op-ed a few weeks ago that was published in the Daily Star about the power of the vote and how important that is and what that meant to our founding fathers, what the intention of it was to our founding fathers and what that means to us today. And so many people take that responsibility, that gift for granted.
No, without a doubt, Everybody's got their civic duty to go out there and vote over these next 6 days, no matter which political party you belong to. It's part of what makes America great. We're not actually as divided as the media might make us seem. As I said, there, if you go down, you know, 16 ballot positions, you've got a 1 in 65,000 chance of someone voting the exact same way as you do. It's almost impossible. The trick is to find the parts that we agree on and work together.
Absolutely. And have open dialogue with people, especially those that you disagree with. And at the end of the day, if you still fundamentally disagree, then you just disagree. But we can do so civilly. And that's something that I think that our society lacks across the board. And the media loves to sensationalize that, is they like to point out where we're divided rather than discussing the things where we have commonality. Because there are lots of things that we can work on together. And I think As it's portrayed in the news media, where this Republican says this and this Democrat says this, really in the halls of Congress, when you are able to speak to our congressmen or senators, they actually get along pretty well. It's not as divided as the media displays it to be, and so that's. You know, that gives me hope. That gives me optimism.
Yeah, I've always heard from Congressman Cisco Mani that he says, besides for like the three or four or five talking heads on the far ends of the parabolic curve of politics,
That's right?
On the far, far left and the far, far right, who go out and make sensationalized statements, particularly because they come from legislative districts where as long as they win their primary, they're pretty much safe. So they can say some outlandish things to get news headlines. But then behind the scenes, the other, you know, 400-some-odd individuals that make up the House of Representatives are actually working together to create solutions and get some things done.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, those types of things give me hope. They give me optimism. And you know, we're not as broken as people think that we are. And, you know, people say, you know, this is a great country, and we are, but we certainly have our flaws too. And it was never intended to be perfect. That's why the founders said to create a more perfect union, because we will never be that. The target is constantly moving, and the issue is we just have to evolve with the times. There are a number of constitutional amendments that we have that probably could be revised. You know, I don't have any specifics off the top of my head, but we're certainly a different country than we were in 1776.
No, without a doubt. And remember, on all those ballot initiatives out there, like, there's always just the option for no to maintain the status quo. Unlike a political race where you have to choose between two candidates and a binary zero or one type measure, on the initiatives, if you like what's going on right now, you vote no and it's staying the same way. Like, it's going to be exactly how it was. Now, there could be differing opinions about whether we're in a better place today than we were, you know, a few years ago. But quite frankly, and no vote on any one of those just simply maintains the status quo, correct?
Absolutely. And you mentioned earlier there's 13 propositions on this ballot. It is a two-pager. You know, actually four pages if you count front and back. So it is a long ballot. I definitely encourage people to know what you're voting on, get to know the candidates, get to know the propositions, and vote your morals, vote your values.
Without a doubt. When we come back after the break, I want to break down a number of the chamber events that you've got coming up. We've got an amazing gala coming up this Saturday. I know it's a busy time in Tucson as this weather breaks. Lots of cool stuff going on this weekend, but I do encourage people to attend that particular gala, and I'd love to break down other events and advocacy that the Tucson Hispanic Chamber has coming up for Southern Arizona. All kinds of awesome events happening this weekend. Dia de los Muertos weekend, the All Souls procession that's going to go on Sunday afternoon as well too in Tucson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Rob Elias, President, CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We're bringing you all things local always on Jump in Tucson. On Tuesdays, you've got Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. On Wednesdays, you get myself talking a little bit of hospitality and politics. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton coming up from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. He's going to have Carlos and Kira Aragon, COO and founders of Reach for the Stars, a local nonprofit. And then on Mondays and Fridays, you've got Dr. Ed Ackerley bookending your week, 9 to 10 a.m. on Jump in Tucson. But we are joined live in studio right now by Rob Elias, the president and CEO of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back, Rob.
Grant, it is a pleasure to be here with you, sir.
Hey, it's my pleasure to have you. This upcoming weekend, we've got the Orchid Gala going on for the Hispanic Chamber at Casino del Sol. Can you break down that event a little bit for us?
Yeah, this is a fantastic celebration that we do every single year. In the past, it's been called Noche de Éxitos Gala. And bi-national award ceremony. This year, we've changed the theme and we've created an orchid gala. So we're going to have thousands of orchids. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful event where we get to honor some people that have done some amazing things to the community. People like Paul Diaz of Diaz Management Incorporated and McDonald's. I think he owns 24 McDonald's now in Southern Arizona. Adriana Martinez is our Hispanic Woman of the Year of Casa Martinez Food. Southwest Gas, our Corporation of the Year. I can go on and on. I have to mention the Tucson International Mariachi Conference is receiving our first ever Heritage Award, and we're so excited to have them at the event and to recognize them for what they've done in our community.
And so that event is going on this Saturday at Casino del Sol?
That's correct. It's cocktail hour starts around 4:30, and the award ceremony will start at about 6 p.m.
Sounds awesome. Are there still tickets available for this event, or is it sold out right now?
There are. It's very, very few of them. I think we have like 10 seats available. So if you're interested, buy them now because they are going to get scooped up.
And where can listeners go to purchase those tickets?
I think go to TucsonHispanicChamber.org.
Awesome. Well, we're looking forward to that event up over here. And as I was waxing in the previous segment about the Hispanic Chamber willing to take some positions on things that perhaps other chambers hadn't taken up, can you help expound upon the differences of the Hispanic Chamber compared to some of these other ones? There's a lot of talk out there that maybe there's too many business advocacy groups in Tucson. Maybe that message gets watered down. And I think you differ with that opinion. Can you tell me why?
Yeah, sure. I think we all serve a different niche. A lot of my counterparts, a lot of my colleagues at different organizations, they focus on specific things. Organizations like SALC and Ted Maxwell does an amazing job with that organization. They are very, very policy focused. That is their sole purpose, is to focus on things and across the local level, county level, state level, and often at the federal level as well. But that is what they do. And they do a great job at it. Metro Chamber is the same. They are very, very focused on policy issues, but they also do a number of other things as well that help advocate for business in the region. Ours is different because, and the reason we were founded is because we didn't feel at the time, and back in 1989, that there was proper advocacy for the Hispanic community within Tucson and Southern Arizona. So the Tucson Hispanic Chamber was formed. It wasn't until years later that we added a Southern Arizona component where we now advocate for communities like Nogales and Bisbee and Douglas and Sierra Vista and Tombstone and everything in between. But another difference between us is that, I'm going to be very careful because I don't want to seem like I'm bad mouthing any other organizations, because I think I highly respect their leadership. I highly respect what they do. We feel that business, a lot of people say business is just business. We disagree with that. Business is personal, because in order to do business with somebody, you have to like them. You need to know what they do. They can have a great product, but if you don't like them, you don't want to use them. And more often than not, you don't. So we focus a lot on the things that advocate and move our community forward that aren't necessarily solely business focused. We want to create an environment where business can thrive. But in order for business to thrive, the consumer has to thrive as well. The people have to thrive. And that means talking about what looks good for the economy, what looks good for jobs, what looks good for prices, what looks good for homes, what is education looking like, what are we doing about environment and clean energy. All these things play a part in making Southern Arizona ripe for growth, responsible growth.
Now, I'm always going to be a big advocate for jobs, right? I feel that jobs cure almost all ills over here. In the same way we say in the restaurant business, sales cure all ills, and you can fix your labor cost and you can fix your cost of goods sold and all your maladies if you can sell. If you can create jobs, it trickles down to just about everybody else.
Yeah, jobs are vitally important. One thing that people need to understand is, you know, everybody is going after high paying jobs, and everybody says they love to talk about, we want to attract high paying jobs. Well, yes, that's true. But what does that do for the community that can be perceived as negative? Well, when we have higher paying jobs here, the cost of housing increases, and we already have people that talk about the price of homes are too expensive, and they're not wrong. You know, the cost of rent is too expensive. They are not wrong. And so people have to look outside of the city, as they've been doing. This is why you've seen the growth in Sahuarita and Green Valley, and the growth of Vail, or the growth of Marana or Oro Valley, because the cost of living inside the city of Tucson has gotten very expensive. So you can get much more house for the money in those places outside of the city.
Tucson is looking to make things even more expensive, though, right now. I mean, our current sales tax in the city of Tucson is a total of 8.7%. And it looks like on you know, the second week of March, we may be actually having an election to raise the city of Tucson sales tax another half cent.
Yeah, that is an item that we're looking at very, very closely, and our chamber has not taken a position on that yet. There's still a lot to be discussed about that. A lot of polling of the audience, of course. You know, I represent 1,500 members in Southern Arizona, and so before I speak on that, I want to talk to them and see what they're feeling, because I don't speak for myself. I speak on behalf of the members of our organization. That's who I work for. So we haven't taken a position on that yet. We have an idea of what we're going to do. But that opinion is not fully formed just yet.
I understand. I've got my own personal opinion about that one, and I've been rather vocal about this one on the radio, that if you make the city of Tucson 50% more expensive in taxes, because that's what it would do, the difference between 9.2 and 6.1%, right? If you make it with 50% more taxes, you're going to decrease growth and infill projects in the city of Tucson, an area that's already challenged, right? I want to see more restaurants and more activity and more sales tax and more jobs happen inside the city. But as we have over-increasing regulations, whether it be to parking or to shade or to all the various other things, we end up with hundreds of 24-hour smoke shops as opposed to businesses that contribute to their community's success.
Yeah, I think everybody would agree that we need a better balance in this community. Certainly, I'm a proponent of the environment. Our organization is a proponent of the environment. Because if we don't mind our natural resources, then economy doesn't mean anything, because we're now an uninhabitable place to live. So if we can't live here, we're certainly not doing business here. So we have to be mindful of that. And I'm not saying that that's a year away or 5 years away or 10 years away. But I do know that we live in the desert, and I do know that water is a scarce resource for us. Now, the city of Tucson does an amazing job with our water, and people actually come and study how we operate with water. And so I give credit to mayor and council for that. But, you know, if you have any discussion with city managers or city planners, we have huge lots of land that are taken up by like a little miniature footprint of a Dutch Bros or a Starbucks. And so we have... I think we need to work on our zoning a little bit.
Yeah, parking particularly, Rob, I would say is actually one of the biggest issues. If you look at, of course, the Elkhorn Mall is always the example that everybody uses because of that crazy additional unused lot they have to the east over there. But it affects just about everybody else too. You can't build a restaurant in the city of Tucson without one parking space for every 100 square feet of customer space, right? So you talk about 5,000-6,000 square foot restaurants. That's 50, 60, 70, 80 parking spaces as a minimum. And do you just create a city filled with a sea of black top to engage with businesses like restaurants and bars, where maybe people take Ubers a little more? Maybe it isn't like the old movie Swingers, where five guys are rolling in five separate cars to engage in you know, their late night shenanigans anymore. I don't see people behaving in that way the same way we might have in the 70s or 80s and 90s. We got to take a quick break over here. We got one more segment coming up with Rob Elias, the president and CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. We are joined live in the KVOI studios by Rob Elias, President and CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. Thanks again for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us, Rob.
Grant, this has been a fantastic experience. Thanks so much.
No, so we earlier in the show, we promoted the Orchid Gala this weekend coming up at Casino del Sol. Very few tickets remaining. We've got another big event, a signature event from the Hispanic Chamber coming up as well, too, the 40 Under 40 Awards, right?
Yeah, this is an event that we absolutely love. We get to celebrate 40 individuals that across all industries, and whether you're a teacher, a firefighter, police officer, City of Tucson worker, CEO, if you make significant contributions to the community, we want to honor you. And so every June, we start a nomination process where the general public can nominate people that are under the age of 40 doing incredible work in the community. And this year we had 230 nominations to read from, and we selected an incredible group of people.
And so when is that event?
That's going to be Tuesday, December 10th from 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning at the JW Marriott Star Pass.
Now, I love that 40 Under 40 event and celebrating this, like, you know, early age, like, entrepreneur, business, and political, social leaders, because we've had entire shows about how, like, nothing happens in Tucson for the people between ages, say, 25 and 40, right? After you graduate the university, it's just this, you know, void. And I was a recipient many, many years ago of the 40 Under 40. It turns out I can no longer qualify. I think it was the performance enhancing drug testing and the carbon 14 age testing on me that I no longer unfortunately qualify. So we're going to leave that one open to some other lucky recipients.
How old were you when you won that?
Hey, let's not talk about that on the air, Grant. Over here. It was late 30s, but I was still under 40.
Still okay? Under 40. That's still, what matters.
Yes, that is what counts. No, that's a great event celebrating a lot of young civic leaders out there, and it's great to see. I'm really looking forward to that one. I'll be there with you next to you on that one as well, too. Now, Rob, last I checked on the political roster, you had actually run for city council a few years ago for Ward 1, if I remember correctly.
That's right, yeah.
And do you have any other political aspirations? Are
you? You know, I get that question a lot. And it's something that I won't rule out, but I'll tell you this, Grant, that I don't aspire to be an elected official. I don't aspire to be a politician. What I aspire to do is to help people and improve their lives. And I'm one of these optimists that that believes that politics, when done correctly, can actually improve people's lives. And so, you know, if I'm not going to say no, because I never will, but if there is an opportunity where I feel that my voice will help people, then I may give it consideration. But as of right now, I really love what I do. Our organization has a tremendous amount of influence, and I just enjoy speaking and having genuine dialogue with all of our elected leaders.
Look, it would have been a tough year to have been in politics over this last year both the city council race and, of course, 2024 going to be a pretty tough year for everybody. We're only 6 days away from some results. I think a lot of people are holding their breath on both sides of the mm-hmm. aisle. I myself am quite frankly looking forward to this period just being over with. I don't know about you, but in terms of text messages on my phone, in terms of advertising, maybe even we're contributing to it here at 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Sorry, Patty. But there is just a lot of politics going on in our lives right now.
There certainly is. I have the word stop on like auto-generate on unsubscribing to my text messages. So, yeah.
Without a doubt. Well, in our last couple minutes of the show, I'd be remiss to not ask you about your favorite local restaurants here in Tucson. Give me a shout-out. Where do you and the missus like to go out to eat in Southern Arizona?
When the Breakfast and Lunch Cafe is at the top of that list, they're over on First and Grant. They do an amazing job with their food, and you just feel good when you walk out of there. They're such joyful people. It's such a cheerful atmosphere, and you feel better when you leave. Other than that, St. Mary's Tortilla Factory on St. Mary's and Grande, in my opinion, this may be unpopular some, but the best beans in Tucson for sure. And so I would say that those are two of my favorites.
Those are great local choices there, Rob. And as a city that's worked on this branding of city of gastronomy, a tough word indeed, right? And then we were the best 23 miles of Mexican food, and it looks like we're kind of now be America's best Mexican food as well too. Like, it's important to promote these local gems and to go visit them, actually, not just promote them on the radio, but go out and spend your hard-earned dollars. And these local restaurants that are mom and pop owned, where like these are really, really tough businesses to do. So do get out there and support some of these great choices like Buendia and St. Mary's. These are great places to go out and spend your hard-earned dollars here in the city of Tucson.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. And when you go, take care of the people who take care of you as well. So, you know, don't get cheap on the tip. These people work hard for a living, and it only improves our economy.
Without a doubt. All right, last minute of the show. Where can we find more information about the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce?
And certainly online, TucsonHispanicChamber.org. We love our Instagram. We love our social media platforms. So if you don't follow us, please do. On Instagram, it's the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. Please give us a follow. We have some incredible content on there, and that's usually where we have most of our up-to-date information, our breaking news of what's upcoming.
Thanks so much. That's Rob Elias, president and CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber here on Jump in Tucson. Lots of great things coming up this week. Tomorrow on Jump in Tucson, again, Tom Moulton coming up. If you listen to Wake Up Tucson, Christy Simone's going to have the scariest convenience stores in all of Tucson on his Halloween episode over there. Next week, Josh Jacobson and I are going to have an election breakdown episode. He's going to join me on Wednesday next week to break down the good, the bad, the ugly, and what's going to be a pretty long week, I think, for all of us here in the Old Pueblo. But remember, we're not truly as different as you might think out there. It is a numbers game. I hope all of you have enjoyed listening to these numbers. That's 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. See you next week on Jump in Tucson.